Sai's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. It's 9:40 a.m. in Prashanthi Nilayam, India right now. Today is the 1st of May 2014 and you're tuned to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Thank you very much for your company. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of the super glue that binds us all, the love of our Lord, the love of our lives, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Sai Ram, and good morning to all our listeners. My name is Karuna and I'm delighted to connect you live to the spiritual capital of the universe, better known as Prashanthi Nilayam. Current temperature outside our studio right now is 29 degrees Celsius. We're expecting daytime highs of 40 Celsius. And I want to let you know, dear sisters and brothers, that all things considered, the heat in Puttaparthi is really still quite manageable compared to where I was these past few days. Well, the city of Mumbai hosted an amazing, out-of-this-world Aradhana Day tribute to the legend of pure love, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, this past Sunday. The venue was, of course, centrally air-conditioned, and everything was very nice inside. But once we stepped out of the air-conditioning, the city of Mumbai was hot and sultry. That heady mix of heat and humidity, it made for a very unpleasant combination. With the humidex factored in, Mumbai was so unbearably hot that Puttaparthi felt quite comfortable and welcoming when I returned home last night. I guess it's also relative. I was working away last night preparing for this morning's show without air conditioning. I did not even miss it. Could not have done so in Mumbai as the perspiration would have drenched the keyboard. There truly is no place like home. And there truly is no home more welcoming and comfortable than the arms of Mother Sai. She always awaits to embrace us in Prashanthi Nilayam, where the heart is always at home, the mind at ease, and the soul ever in bliss. I hope you too are experiencing some of it through this live connection. On that delightful note, let me announce the menu I will be serving today on Morning Glory. Apart from giving you an update on the recent Mumbai event, the tribute to the legend of pure love, which I was very fortunate to attend, today we will kick off Morning Glory with two brand new interviews. One, a fleeting moments lasting memories interview with Sai student Mrs. Lata Ramesh of Bangalore. But before that, there is a brand new episode of Tris with Divinity. Under the spotlight today is the internationally acclaimed diabetologist, Dr. V. Mohan of Chennai. So here now is that exclusive interview, a detailed Tris with Divinity conversation between Dr. V. Mohan and my colleague, Mr. Bishu Prushti of Radio Sai. But first, an important message about the program Tris with Divinity. Have a listen, please.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises, and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Shri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970, when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and, of course, tiny little rosebuds, which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger. Mm-hmm. And just like a movie or a video, mm-hmm. right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love All, Serve All, we've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock, because we put it on millions and millions of T-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, Love All, Serve All, we put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Trust with Divinity is our weekly series in which We bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Thursday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Traced with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org. Or you can also download and listen to any interview of your choice in this series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/trist. That is radiosai.org/TRYST or TRYST. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, Dr. Mohan, and a warm welcome to you to the studios of Radio Sai. World over, people know you as someone who has worked tirelessly in the area of diabetes for more than 3 decades, and they know you as the chairman and chief diabetologist of Dr. Mohan's group of diabetic institutions present in India and abroad. But for all of us Sai devotees, you are a Sai doctor, you are the convener of Bhagwan's Trust, Sri Satya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu. So it would be really very useful for us to know what are Bhagwan's directions on diabetes, diabetes management, control, prevention, that perhaps you might have received directly from Swami.
I'm very privileged to answer this question, because in one of the rare interviews that I've had with Swami, and I treasure it very much till today, the interview is going on and suddenly he turned to me and he said, "Doctor, why is diabetes increasing in India?" So at that time, we had made a small breakthrough in one of our genetics research. So I thought he is referring to some new genetic discovery. So I said, "Is it genes, Swami?" So he frowned at me and he said, no, not genes, something else. So I said, "People are not walking nowadays, Swami, lack of exercise." "Yes, that is correct. But there is something else which you have not looked at in your own research, and that is why I am asking you," he said. So I said, "Swami, I don't know." Then he said, "Rice, white rice is one of the reasons why sugar is increasing." And then he turned around to the others and said, "You know, this white rice is polished. And so when you take lots of it, people are taking too much of this white rice. So it increases the sugar level. When it increases the sugar level, the insulin goes up. Then all the insulin from the pancreas goes away. Then they become diabetic. Then the sugar goes up. So this is the main reason." And he told me, "Your data, you have got it. Go and look at it," he said. "And if you substitute it with either brown rice or ragi," then he told me, "I take sangati, you know, that ragi bought, I take that. Sugar doesn't go up," he said. "Go and look at it," he said. So I went back to my database and I said, "See, Swami has said like this, let's take out." We had collected all the data, but we didn't even think about it. When we looked at it, we were amazed that there was a direct correlation between the prevalence of diabetes in Chennai and the amount of carbohydrate, that is white rice, which is consumed. So if you took 200 grams of carbohydrate, you had a certain percentage of diabetes. Those who took 400 grams of carbohydrate, just 200 grams more, the diabetes prevalence went up 4 times. And this is after correcting for obesity and all other physical activity and everything else. So for the first time, we are able to show that white rice is directly linked to it. And this directly came from Swami. It was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Then we went ahead and substituted this white rice with brown rice, and lo and behold, the sugar levels came down. Wow. So Swami gave very clear instructions. He said, "Cut down on the rice. If possible, change it, or change the type of rice to less polished rice. Take either wheat or ragi. It is better, less slowly absorbed than this white rice. Take plenty of vegetables. And then you have to walk every day. Physical activity is very important. Exercise is very important. And most of all, reduce your tension, stress." Of course, Swami in another context said, "Hari, Vari, Kari," he has said. In fact, when he said that, I told him, "Vari, Hari, Vari, Kari." But he said, "That is for heart disease," he said.
Yes.
"For heart disease, you will worry, Kari, Hari." But part of it also relates to diabetes, because Hari and Vari, Hari becomes, you become a type A personality, always trying to do something. So all your hormones get increased. So Swami has very clearly showed that. And reduction of stress, Swami has given so much of importance to pranayama.
the breathing, how you do. So the slow, deep inhalation and exhalation, soham, soham. So the breathing that you do, pranayama, and yoga and meditation helps to calm you. So that brings down the diabetes and the blood pressure. So Swami has in several places given clear instructions, and also within the vegetables, which ones to take, which ones not to take. In the Sai literature, it is there. In fact, there's a book on food and Swami. They have actually compiled everything. So sattvic food, generally.
If you can spend little time and tell listeners about this, you know, the kind of food that they should take.
Yes. So basically what he says is cut down on the starchy vegetables and fruit. For example, rice, potato, beetroot. These are all starchy vegetables. So those things have to be avoided. Lot of green leafy vegetables, whether it is beans or greens or spinach or cabbage or cauliflower. All these are vegetables which are very, very good. So all the green leafy vegetables, those which are under the ground are usually more starchy. Those which are above the ground are good. So the way Swami has said is that take less of rice. When you take a plate, what we do, first of all, we put all the rice. Then only side dishes, we put something else. What Swami's concept is, you first put a lot of vegetables on the plate.
Okay.
And then take a lot of these grams, pulses. Papu will always say, a lot of grams and pulses, it's very rich in protein. In fact, Swami has written clearly in his book for vegetarians. The world over, people are afraid that if you become vegetarian, you will become thin, your muscles will go, you will become a weakling and so on. Swami says, no, there is enough vegetable protein available, either in the form of milk or in the form of dals and all the protein and the sprouts and the grams. And if you include all that, plenty of the tofu, soya bean, Bengal gram, green gram, black gram, all these are very, very rich sources of protein.
But
and they are high-class protein.
They say there are some kind of protein which are there in non-veg food that you cannot get in veg food. What is your
there
take
is,
on that?
There is, scientifically it is correct, because if you look at the essential amino acids, if you see, in rice, for example, lysine is absent, okay? But there is excess of methionine. If you use the pulses, methionine is absent, but lysine is more. So Swami says very clearly, eat them together. So when you combine the rice and the grams together, excess of one is made up by the other. So if one is having less of lysine, it is there in the grams. If one is having less of methionine, it is there in the other. So if you combine both together, it becomes first class quality protein of the best biological value, equal to any animal protein. It's only when you eat it in isolation, suppose you take only the rice and you cut out all that, naturally you will not only be deficient in protein, you will be deficient in some other types of protein also. I don't think if you actually choose it properly and use it properly, you get the same essential amino acid composition as a non-vegetarian food. And I don't think it is right to say that vegetarians will be deficient in this or the other. Sometimes it can be little deficiency of B12. And B12 you can always supplement, either in a capsule form or B12 comes in other thing. So you can always substitute. In some of the nuts there is B12, some of the seeds there is B12, flax seeds and so on. So there are other ways in which you can get that.
Wonderful. So as you are saying this, what comes to me is, you know, there is so much of correlation between spirituality, being a side devotee, and diabetes.
Absolutely. I think they are both intertwined and you cannot separate one from the other.
Yeah, I think if you are a devotee, it will help you to become healthy also.
Definitely. Because Swami's principles, he says a healthy body only can have a healthy mind first. Because he says the body is a temple of the mind. So the temple itself is polluted or it is unhealthy. How the mind can be pure? So first, they must look after the body. That's why Swami always says, give lot of importance to your body's needs also. Because unless the body is strong, how can you serve others? Swami has himself said that hands that help are holier than lips that pray. If your hands are weak, how can you serve? So for that, I think Swami gives lot of importance to nutrition, to rest, to sleep. In the ashram, 9 o'clock lights out. Why? We can keep on working up to 1 o'clock in the morning. The next day you can't do your work. So that is why Swami, I think, from the beginning has trained all Sai devotees to have a disciplined life. Eat in time, have enough time with the family, have positive thoughts always, not negative thoughts, get enough sleep. All these things, and then eat nutritious food, and anything in excess is bad. Swami talks about the 5 white poisons, no? White rice, sugar, salt, maida, and even milk in excess. Even milk in excess is bad. You can have a glass of milk to get some calcium and some protein. But you have 10 glasses of milk, That milk is meant for the calf, not for human beings. So if you drink too much of milk, certain cancers are linked to that. If you take salt, blood pressure. So you can limit your salt intake. Because if you take too much salt, blood pressure. If you take too much of sugar, it leads to diabetes. And similarly, maida and so on. So the five white poisons which Swami says, if we avoid it or take it in moderation, I think they take care of our health.
And if we look at India today, they say there are 6.3 crore exactly. people in India who are afflicted with this disease. And if you look at the list of countries, we come only next
second.
To China.
Second.
Second. It's a very depressing situation. But more and more what we see is youngsters are getting afflicted
yes.
with this disease.
Yes.
So can you please share, you know, what we can do so that, you know, at least Sai youth,
yes.
Sai youngsters are healthy. You know, what is it that they should bring the shift in their lifestyle so that, you know, they are strong enough to do Bhagwan's work, to find fulfillment in their lives?
I can see you have done your homework very well. But the number is, unfortunately, that 6.3 crores or 63 million was last year. This year's figures have just been released on November 14th, World Diabetes Day this year.
Yes.
And it's going to be officially released on December 1st in Melbourne at the World Congress, where I'll also be there, the official release. But the figures are already out. It's 65 million now.
65 million.
So it's 6.5 crore people now in India. China has also moved up a little bit, but we are still in second place, very much ahead of the third country, which is US, which is only 2.4 crore people. We are three times that of US. So the problem, you hit the nail on the head. See, it's not just having diabetes. Many years ago, diabetes is considered a status symbol. So people used to say, I've got my Mercedes-Benz, now I have to get little diabetes to be accepted as a big man in society, you know. Today, all that has changed because it is moving from the rich to the middle class to the poor. A poor man, if he gets diabetes, almost 25% of his income he has to spend on that one disease. So 20% of income is gone just to buy his medicines. So he can't afford it. So what he's going to do is he's going to neglect his diabetes completely. Okay. Second problem, as you rightly said, it used to be a disease of older people. So 50, 60, 70 years you get it. Takes another 20 years to get complications. Or 90 years if you get complications, India's lifespan is only 65 years. So we don't have to worry too much about 95-year-old person whether he may get complications or not. If we all live up to that, that result is a blessing. But from there it started coming to 40s, 30s, 20s. Today, 12-year-old, 13-year-old children yes. are coming. I'm not talking about the insulin-dependent type 1. That comes separately anyway. And that's not a common thing. It's not an increase in epidemic proportion. But the usual adult onset is now coming because of obesity, childhood obesity. And we as Sai devotees, what we have to do is encourage every one of our youth as well as the children. In all our Sai schools, I think physical activity must be given a lot of importance. Second, the reason why this obesity is coming, and that obesity is leading to diabetes, is junk food.
Mm-hmm.
People are eating all kinds of junk food. Instead of drinking water, they are drinking cola. They think it's more fashionable to drink that, you know. In fact, abroad, sometimes mineral water will be costlier than the cola. They make it in, you know, cans and this and in a machine, fountain machine, you can go and take the thing almost for free. So, everybody starts drinking that, calorie content goes up. In a small cola, you have 12 cubes of sugar. Can you imagine? A small cola. So, if you take that 5 times a day, 60 cubes of sugar you have taken. And you multiply that 365, you are talking about thousands and thousands of cubes of sugar. So, these are not small things. When you drink water, clean water, it is zero calories. So, in our SSS VIP villages where we work, I think providing clean drinking water, telling our villagers, telling wherever we work, the Sai organization, drink water. I think that's a very, very healthy thing that we can tell. And that's why Swami has given drinking water to everyone. If you link it through his project, somehow it will come, you know. Because he believed that water is essential for life. And without that, that is why the Sai Water Project is a landmark in the whole world. Nobody, no organization, no single individual in the history of mankind has supplied millions of people with drinking water.
Yes. Yep. In fact, when we talk about Bhagwan's healthcare mission,
yes.
we talk about Bhagwan's hospitals
yes.
and free clinics elsewhere. But other day, this thought came that we don't talk about Bhagwan's water project when we talk about healthcare.
Exactly.
But actually, it is so linked.
They're linked. Because if you give clean water, they won't get infection, they won't get diarrhea, children won't die, your lifespan will increase. See, many of India's children die before 5 years of age. If you see the under 5's deaths, India is doing very badly. It's improving. Many states have improved. The southern states at least now are much better. But the northern states, some are in a very pitiable condition. If those children make it beyond 5 years, then they're okay. They live their normal life. Then they go to 30, 40, 50 years like a normal person. But what do they die when they're 2 years old due to a diarrhea? That is where water comes in. That is why Swami has been so very kind and merciful in giving water to water-starved places where they were drinking water which is undrinkable, you know. Many of the places it's polluted. Many of the places they have toxins in arsenic in the water, or fluoride in the water, very high contents and so on. So Swami, with His infinite mercy and His love, divine love, limitless love, has provided drinking water to, and that is so closely related to health. So I don't think you can actually separate it. And education. Education only gives you the basis for all this. That is why the education is also. So all the three are like a triangle. One fits into the other.
And when you talk about education, I was just reminded of reading the same report. It says that 50% of people with diabetes, according to International Diabetic Federation, do not know that they have the disease.
That is a problem. So that is why, again, if you go back to Swami's mobile hospital, see, everywhere there is a link. What are they doing? They are going in advising people, raising awareness, not specifically about diabetes, but specifically about health and so on. But today, as the communicable diseases are getting controlled to some extent, TB started coming down, HIV is thankfully almost gone, other diseases are coming down, many are preventable. So once you control all that, today if you think of what are the things due to which people are dying in India, already 60% of all deaths in India are due to non-communicable diseases, which includes diabetes, hypertension, heart disease and cancer as the four major causes of death. Only after that then there's injuries, another 10-15%. Only after that communicable diseases are coming. So while communicable diseases are still important in areas where we still have many of the backward states, still people are dying due to tuberculosis or malaria, or so those kind of things still have to be looked into, they will also improve. In the next 5 to 10 years, they'll catch up with the rest of, just like we are catching up with the West, the rural will catch up with the urban, the North, now the South has become a little more advanced, so North will catch up with the South, and some of the backward states, Northeast will catch up with the rest of India. It's all going to happen. It's a question of 5 years, 10 years. Then ultimately we'll be stuck with this problem, yes, you know, of non-communicable diseases. So for that, right now healthy messages have to start. And I think in our SAI organization, we're already doing it. We're doing camps, we're doing mobile hospitals, we're trying to extend that to the whole country. These health messages, so one of the things which leads to this affluence.
Yes.
So one of my reviewers of a paper, you know, from a British journal, humorously the reviewer wrote to me, okay, you're showing that at that time, 10, 15 years, no longer true, now it's caught up. But 15 years ago when I published one of the reports in Chennai, the poor people had very little diabetes. Mm-hmm. The middle class had more. So the reviewer humorously wrote, so is your solution to make everyone poor in India? So they won't get diabetes. Because when they become rich, they're going to get diabetes. So what are you going to do? I said, no. I wrote back, no. Our aim is to educate the rich man and the middle man so that his diabetes won't come. You know, yeah. That is what we should do.
So they say diabetes is a disease of development. And if you want to develop, if you want to increase your standard of living, then you have to get the disease.
Partly true, partly not true. Partly true if you don't take the corrective measures. Because what happens with development is you eat more. Your exercise will come down. See, a guy who is going on a cycle or walking, now buys a scooter. His exercise totally gone. Otherwise, he used to walk 4 kilometers. If you take the villages around Puttaparthi now, compare it to what it was 30, 40 years ago. Now I'm sure every house there will have a motorbike, it'll have a television, it'll have this, it'll have that. All the developments you can see happening there. All that leads to a decrease in physical activity, increase in tension and stress, because now you're trying to meet American deadlines, trying to meet, the youngsters are trying to work in, you know, all these back offices, trying to, BPOs and trying to work to American time. So stress level, the sleep goes. And then when they sit there, what do? They'll be ordering in a pizza or a burger or drinking cola, and that's what they're doing. So all these are leading to diabetes. Not the development which has occurred. The wrong habits which came because of the development. As a side devotee, if we teach them, you do all that. Yes. You earn more. But also see that you keep 1 hour for exercise every day.
Yes.
Eat healthy home food.
Yes.
Have all those things only occasionally.
Yes.
Don't change your whole lifestyle and think this is a new style. Now that I become a corporate person, this is how I do. Not necessary. You can still take your usual home food. Once in a week, go out and have something. Or once in a month, go out and have something. So once those messages we build in, along with our SAI messages, when you go to SSV villages and so on, if we start bringing in these messages, we'll have a healthier India. Some people may ask, is that our priority? You know, we have got so much other work to do, we shouldn't be teaching them how to wash your hands. Well, teach that also. We are not saying don't teach that, you know. Wash your hands 5 times a day, use soap and water, okay. Keep yourself clean, wash your hands after you come back from work, wash your hands before you think. Teach children to do that, teach them hygiene, teach them all that you teach, okay. Along with it, also teach them exercise, teach them some yoga, teach them stress reduction. Today, with development, another thing is happening, suicide rates are going up. Children can't face the competition, you know. When you need 99.8% marks to get into a medical college today, how many can reach it? Become 99, you're a failure, you know. So children who have studied, they don't have money to pay to a private college, to a private medical college, engineering college, they don't have money. They have to get into the government system. And there into the government system, when you say 99.8% is your cut point, 99.6 is a failure then, you know. So in Swami's institutions, there is no first and second. We know that. Everybody is first.
Yes.
So you should not get to think about marks, but about remarks. That's what Swami says. So everywhere, Swami has given those messages that is more important to be first in life, not first in the examination. So how do we prepare them for that wholesome education? And that is where I think Swami's Swarna Yuga concept comes in.
Yes.
Because Swami has said that Swarna Yuga will come, that India will be a world leader, that the world itself will be harmonious, that the universal brotherhood is going to come. All that he has said. How is it going to come? Not through old people like us, you know, who have already passed through the generation, but from youngsters. And where are those youngsters coming? We've got 100 Sai schools. These Sai schools are producing 50,000 school children who are taught ideals of Swami, okay, who are different. They are our hope for the future. Now, when these people come out, when they have a good education, they are going to come up in life, they are going to become collectors, they are going to become, bureaucrats, they are going to become doctors, lawyers and so on. They are going to follow ethical principles in life as taught by Swami and his institutions. That is the future. That is the Swarna Yuga which is going to come. It is so much deteriorated today that a sea change has to come. And that is why Swami has given so much of importance to his students. He always says, my students come first. Sometimes he used to feel jealous. He always says, his students only come first. He's given so much importance. Now we understand why he is giving so much of importance to them. Because he sees them as his ambassadors who are going to carry his messages into the next generation. And they are the people who are going to change India, change the world. Okay? Today, when one of Swami's students goes for employment anywhere, let it be a multinational company anywhere, the moment they see Satya Sai institution, they grab them. Because they know they will not be corrupt, they will be ethical, they will do what is the best. Because that is how they have been taught to do. That itself is a great thing, isn't it? So I think that is where integration of all these values, education, human values that Swami has taught, which has come through all his schools and the children and the succeeding generations which are going to come, that is a hope for India. And that is a hope for the world.
But as you mentioned about being ethical in society, you know, this question comes to me because this is something that we have faced whenever we speak to youngsters, you know, especially whenever anyone tells them that, you know, when you go out in society, you have to be ethical, you have to follow these principles. You know, people listen, youngsters listen, but they say, you know, it's not really going to be so practical. The world outside is so different. You can't really make it big if you want to strictly follow all these principles. You know, some things are good only for the books.
Yeah.
Now, what is your take on that? You've been so successful in your life. You've received Padma Shri from the president's hands. What would you like to say to this generation? Can you share something that you have experienced in your life, from your own personal experience?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Partly their fears are justified. Because, you know, Swami says, he himself says, you come to Prashanthi Nilayam, you're here for a week, it's a different world, so you have so many ideals you think about, like a New Year resolutions, okay? You do everything.
Yes.
Then you step out onto that bus outside, and the moment you get in, you see the world is different, you know, the whole world is different. So the world out there is a little different. But that doesn't mean that we should not try and that we should give up and that nothing is possible, okay? We have to persist with what you think is right. And, in fact, there is a book now called The Difficulty in Being Good by Guru Charan Das.
Yes.
So, he just takes, you know, from Mahabharata, from Ramayana, and he says, everybody who has tried to do good has been in trouble. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because it's not only now. For generations, it has been, for eons, it has been like that. That somebody tries to do good, and he'll get into trouble. Okay? Sita did all that she could, but still she was suspected in the end. Was she really faithful? You know? So, somebody who does good, it's very difficult for them to persist. And that is where the challenge is. Swami says they're all tests for you. You know? And each test you pass, you come higher and higher in how I assist you. And if you're going to get something very easily, it's not worth getting that degree at all. Okay? So those are the tests in life where we have to take a call. So we stepped out of Tamil Nadu and came to Hyderabad and set up our branch there. So initially we were doing very badly and very slowly to speak. It's different. They don't know us as well as in Tamil Nadu. To the first foray into another state, Andhra Pradesh, and the culture there was slightly different. Okay.
Another institution of Dr.
Mohan. Branches. Yeah, one of our 16 branches. Now we have 16, and the first one is in Muscat, just coming up with Swami's grace. But outside Tamil Nadu, the first one was in Hyderabad. So we started this. So we had a training program. Okay. So this training program is purely voluntary. The doctors come in over a period of few days, train them in diabetes. They don't pay anything. It's free. And I'm offering all that I have learned to them as and these are private practitioners. They're not even diabetologists. They're general practitioners who do lots of other things and they have diabetes. So after everything was over, after certificate was also given to them, they've been trained and everything that we had to teach them, we have taught them and all. Then they're going to go back and do general practice even then. I just made a casual comment saying that now that I've taught you, you'll be able to treat diabetes well, but you might have some difficult case which you're not able to handle. And if anything is there, we are always there at your service. Okay, I didn't even solicit, I didn't even say refer to us. I just said, if you need any help, we are always there. If some high-end equipment, somebody has some eye problem, kidney problem, something like that, you can refer to us, you know, if you want to. It's up to you if you want to refer. Straight away the doctors are telling me, after getting everything from me, free of cost, okay, and getting the, you know, benefit of being educated and all the material given to them, everything given free of cost for weeks together, all the knowledge being imparted, they tell me directly, how much kickback will you give us?
Oh,
so, for a moment I was taken aback and I said, what? They said the going rate is 20% in Hyderabad. So, if you give us anything more, 25, 30, we will refer to you. So, I said, I'm sorry, we have never done it in our life, and I won't be able to give you any kickback at all, because I have not done this so far, and I don't think I can do it, because first of all, our rules don't permit it, and my ethics don't permit it, I'm a Sai devotee, I can't do it, and the way our institution works, we have never done like that. So, I will not be able to give any kickbacks to you. And they said, we will not refer a single patient to you. I said, so be it, you know, I'm willing to close down the Hyderabad center, okay, if necessary, but I will not give you kickbacks in order to work. So, it almost came to a crisis, and I came here and I prayed to Swami and so on, and I remember it was in December of 1 year, it's 2.5 years had passed, we were going in loss, and I called my Hyderabad person, Dr. Shastri, who now works with me for 24 years now, and he worked with me the first 14, 15 years, then only I sent him to Hyderabad. Now he's been there about 8 years now. So I called him and I said, shall we consider, I mean, we'll give it another 2-3 months time, obviously. And if it's not, it's still going loss, how long I can, keep going loss? Why don't you come back to Chennai? I mean, we'll continue. Chennai is doing well, we'll come back to Chennai. He said, sir, whatever you decide, we will do that. But no giving kickbacks, okay? We will not do that. If necessary, we'll close down the center. Miraculously, this is a pure miracle of Swami. That's where, see, he's been testing. Will you do it? Will you not do it? That's where the test comes. So, after that, from January, a sudden influx of patients, you know, I don't know from where, suddenly it came, and the rest is history. Hyderabad became one of our good branches.
Wow.
One of our success stories now, you know. What happened between January and December and January? Nothing. We did nothing special. We did no advertising. We did no kickbacks. We did nothing. We continued as is where is. Suddenly, it changed. Suddenly, the divine grace came. Okay? It must have been a test saying, will they give in to this or not give in to this? And when we said no and surrendered to Swami, he then took over and then he made it a success. So, I think if you stick to your principles, in the short term, you may lose something, but in the long term, what you get out of it, the respect you get out of it, people will come to you. After all, everybody is looking for a change in India, isn't it? People are looking for, people are fed up
yes.
with everybody being corrupt and so on. So if they see somebody who is, of course in the short term they will be, not only in the short term, even in the long term you'll have a problem. Because if you are trying to do good in society, everybody including avatars who have tried to do good have been criticized. You know? So unnecessarily for nothing that they have done, people criticize. That is human nature. But ultimately, as Swami says, truth will prevail. Ultimately goodness will prevail. No, there will be no instance in history where only evil prevailed. You take the entire Puranas and everything. Ultimately, the good only prevail. But look at all the good that people tried to do. Yudhishthira. You take anybody. You know, they would have gone through so much of suffering, you know. And the most purest man gambles, loses. Why should he gamble? Why should he lose? He's meant to do that. He's meant to go through that suffering, you know. And then he is meant to go through that purification process. So that is how I think we'll have to. So I would tell youngsters, don't worry. Stick to your principles. Do what you think is right. If one door closes, another door will open. It cannot be that the whole of history is wrong. That the whole of all the teachings that Swami has taught us, the various avatars in the past have taught us, are all wrong. So if you stick to what you believe is correct, and you stick to that, you will be able to do that. I'm not saying that little bit of here and there, it may not be there. You might have to please somebody. You might in life you have to, for example, whatever you think we cannot tell, no? In life?
Yes.
Truthful. So now, right now, I think something bad about you. Can I say it straight away? You cannot. So certain things you have to play in diplomacy. Lately the talk may go away. So life is like that. I think we have to go along. We cannot go along one straight path like that. There could be things. But by and large, stick to the principles and pray. That's the other thing I would say. When you have a difficult situation, surrender. Surrender to Swami and say, that's it. I can't do anything. And I'd like to talk about one or two medical miracles which have happened like that.
Sure,
physical
sir.
Miracles are there. There are also medical miracles which happen.
Really, it would be very nice if you can share about how you are able to feel Bhagwan's presence actually in your profession.
In the practice.
Because, you know, as you mentioned, ultimately truth will prevail.
Yeah.
But if you look at Mahabharata or any other instance also, what is also true is, during this entire test, God is with...
He's with you, actually. Yeah.
In the Mahabharata, it's so obvious. Krishna was with the Pandavas.
Yes.
I think if you look at all this history also, God was always with them.
Yes.
So, it's only a question of we feeling the presence.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
If you can share, how you've been able to
so,
feel the presence.
So, in the profession, see, we treat as a normal doctor. If somebody came to me as a patient, I will normally treat, as a patient, and I will continue to treat. After praying to Swami every single morning, we pray to Swami that, give me the courage, give me the wisdom to do what is right and help my patients, and I am only an instrument, and through me, you treat, you heal. I am only doing the external thing of giving a medicine or giving an advice. It's you who is healing. So that, of course, every single day it goes. At the end of the day, we thank him for all that he has done. That goes without saying. But sometimes, the best of doctors are stumped. They just don't know what to do. I've told this in front of Swami in 2008 in a speech, but I'd like to just repeat it here. There was a Muslim gentleman who came, and he had undergone a surgery, a small anal surgery he had undergone, and he had a very low pain threshold. He cannot stand any pain, the least of pain, and this is a very painful area. So he had been undergone a surgery there, and the first night after that operation, he didn't sleep at all. He had intense pain. So finally we had given Fortwin, and then Pethidine. These are the narcotic drugs which you normally give as a last resort. I gave him that also.
Painkillers.
Painkillers. Narcotic painkillers they're called. Okay. If you give them for long enough, they get addicted to that,
Mm-hmm.
So I gave it to him. I said, he needs a pain. He's shouting with pain. We gave him that. He didn't sleep. The whole night with that also, he didn't sleep. So next evening, I had gone somewhere. Then I knew this man is, in trouble. So I went back to do rounds. Around 8:30 in the night, I went back to do rounds. And the moment I went to his room, he caught my hand. And he said, doctor, do something. I'm having pain, do something. So I said, look, I have given you, yesterday the strongest of medicines I've given you. There's nothing stronger than that I can think of, for pain. So I'll probably repeat it today. No. You must do something for me, relieve the pain. I don't care what you do. I cannot go through one more night of pain. I'm suffering, doctor. I'm suffering. Pain. So my heart melted. I don't know what to do. I told him, close your eyes. And he closed his eyes. And he was sitting on the bed. So I have this ring, Swami's ring. So I just prayed to Swami and put the ring on his head and said, I just silent prayer to Swami. I said, Swami, I don't know what to do, This fellow, I've given him everything and I'm just not able to, control his pain. You are all merciful, you are all loving, and this man needs his help. So I'm praying to you to relieve him of his pain. Irrespective of what medicine I give, I don't think that's going to have the thing. It is you who is going to, relieve his pain. I pray to you for this pain and I surrender at your lotus feet because I can't. That's it. As a doctor, I'm stumped. Now I surrender to you.
Tune in to Sai. Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai Ram, and thank you for staying tuned to Morning Glory on the 1st of May 2014. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is 19 minutes past 10 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. You just heard part one of our two-part Tris with Divinity interview with Dr. V. Mohan of Chennai. Dr. V. Mohan is a diabetologist of international repute and a dedicated member of the Sai organization, and he was in conversation with Radio Sai's very own Mr. Bishu Prushti. Next week, I will play for you the final part of this conversation, and I hope you will join us. Meanwhile, your feedback is very important to us. So please share your thoughts and comments with us by email at listener@radiosai.org. Now, as I told you at the start of the show, I was at Mumbai this past Sunday attending the mega Aradhana Day tribute organized by the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of Maharashtra and Goa. It was called Tribute to the Legend of Pure Love. And what a tribute it was. Some of the finest names in the music industry were involved in it. Right from the Santur maestro, Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma, to the famous singer Shri Anoop Jalota, Shri Pankaj Udas, Srimati Kavita Krishnamurti, Ms. Richa Sharma, Ms. Padmaja Joglekar, Shri Sumit Tapu, Shri Gaurav Chopra, and many others. And of course, the winners of the Balvikas Bhajan singing competition stole the show with their wonderful bhajan singing. And guess who came to felicitate the children on their achievement? An internationally well-known alumna of the Mumbai Balvikas program, none other than Ms. Aishwarya Rai Bachchan. She was, of course, very pleasing on both the eye and the ear, as she was looking her ravishing self, no doubt, but she also spoke from the heart about her Balvikas days and the learning that it gave her to face life as a public figure later on. Now, dear sisters and brothers, we are very well aware that our live webcast of this program had glitches, and many of you could not enjoy it. We apologize profusely for that. But please rest assured that we will make up to you by bringing you the entire program, including Ms. Aishwarya Rai Bachchan's speech and many other interviews with these wonderful artists that we were able to record in the media room on the sidelines of the program. All you have to do is to just stay tuned to Morning Glory in coming weeks, and the treat will be served right here as well as on our website. After all, we are here to please our Lord Sai in each of our listeners. And only when our listeners are pleased, we feel Bhagwan is satisfied with our efforts. Dear brothers and sisters, you matter the most to us, as you are our Swami for all of us at Team Radio Sai. So please, once again, accept our apology if your web link did not function well on Sunday, and rest assured that you will enjoy everything on Radio Sai. The main program, the behind-the-scenes excitement from Mumbai's mega Aradhana Day tribute to the legend of pure love, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, that was held at Worli on April the 27th, 2014. Moving along, it is now time for a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Today's interview is with Mrs. Lata Ramesh of Bangalore. This again is a two-part interview with the graduate of Baba's College, and here is part one for your listening pleasure that I recorded with Lata not too long ago. Sai Ram, sisters and brothers, welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, conversations with the former students of Sai schools and universities. Under the spotlight today is Mrs. Lata Ramesh. Lata Ramesh completed her BCom in 1991 from the Anantapur campus of the Sai University. And then she earned her MBA from ITM Bombay in 1993. After working in a foreign exchange brokerage for 2.5 years, she chose to be a stay-at-home mother when her older daughter was born. At the time of this recording on April the 2nd, 2014, Lata is a proud mom of two daughters, aged 17 and 13. Her older child is currently studying in Swami's school here in Prashanthi Nilayam. Lata is a multitasker who juggles between her various responsibilities with ease and grace, I might add. Apart from being a full-time homemaker, a mother, and the rest that comes with the territory, she has always placed top priority on her Sai duties. Consequently, Lata has been a Balvikas guru since 1998, teaching all levels of Balvikas in groups 1, 2 and 3. For some time, she also taught value education and Balvikas at schools for the underprivileged and also in a slum. She has been active at local seva activities such as Narayan Seva, Clothes Drive, Essential Collection for Villages and Urban Slums. Currently, Lata Ramesh is the coordinator for the Balvikas alumni in Karnataka. She is a motivated volunteer who travelled to Hyderabad recently to undergo training in dynamic value parenting. Sai Ram Lata, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories on Radio Sai.
Sai Ram Didi.
Lata, let's begin with Swami's entry into your life. How, when, where, why?
Swami came into our family in 1964.
Ooh.
When my maternal grandfather, he was already a Shirdi Baba devotee.
And you were not born there.
I was not born. My siblings were also not born. And he had heard about Satya Sai Baba being in reincarnation of Shirdi Baba. And he was very curious, and he came all the way from Jabalpur, where he was staying then. And he came all the way down south to Puttaparthi. And Swami gave him an interview. And it was a very touching interview where Swami actually told him that people think that you're not very ritualistic, you're not very religious because you don't do too many pujas. But I know that you're a very good person. And with that short and sweet word, Swami captured his heart and he became a devotee. My mother was yet to believe then, though my grandfather went back and told her. But the very next year, that was in 1965, my sister had just been born. And my maternal grandmother, she was very, very jealous of her husband that he had gone and seen Baba, and she missed a chance. So she came to Bangalore to visit my parents, who were resident in Bangalore then. And she went and told my mother that I have come for a very short time and I want to see Baba. And people tell me that Satya Sai Baba comes frequently to Bangalore and I also want to participate in Sai Bhajans. So can you just ask your husband to find out an office where bhajans are happening and whether Baba is there in town? So my mother very dutifully went and told my father. He was just leaving for work that day and he said, please inquire in office that whether Baba is here. And he was a little irritated, probably he was late for work or whatever. He was a little irritated and very sarcastically said, yeah, yeah, that's why I'm going to office, to just inquire about all this Baba and where bhajans are and all that. I have no other work. And he just walked off. But the same day, around 11:30, as he was working in his desk, a gentleman came and met him. He introduced himself. He said, I work in the next department. You don't know me, Mr. Venkatraman. But my wife knows your wife. We are acquainted and we are going to see Satya Sai Baba today in Chamrajpet. And I think your wife may be interested and you all may be interested. Why don't you all accompany us? We can go as two families. My father initially wanted to say no, but then he recollected what his wife had said. And immediately he came back home and he said, you know what has happened? He was all excited about it. And then the whole family, along with my maternal grandmother, saw Swami for the first time in Chamrajpet. Of course, the darshan was very far off.
1965.
Darshan was very far off, but my mother was captured with the bhajans. Raja Reddy sang a song, and even today she remembers a bhajan, Krishna, Krishna, Radha, Krishna, Hey, Gokula Bala. And she started humming, and you know, the bhajans kept resounding in her mind the whole night, and then she developed an urge to attend Sai bhajans, and then she started attending the local community bhajans, and slowly over the years, that's how Swami captured.
Very interesting. So in a few years, by the time you and your siblings came along, I understand you had your own set of experiences with Swami even before you became a Sai student.
Yes. Even in fact, when I was just a 20-day-old baby, and my whole family, my siblings, my parents, we were already infused with Swami's love. And my mother firmly believed that Swami's name, the word Sai Ram, was all-powerful. And we experienced that reality. When I was just a 20-day-old baby, my brother, who was 4.5 years old, he met with a scooter accident. He had just come back from school. He had alighted from the cycle rickshaw. We were living in Meerut at that time. I think it was 1971. And after alighting from the cycle rickshaw, he was running across the road to our building. And just then, a scooter, two youths who were seated in the scooter, they sped by, Anna, and there was almost like a headlong collision. My brother fell down, and his head was just going to come under the scooter's front wheel. My mother was there doing some work in the terrace, and she was observing this, and at that situation, she couldn't do anything except shout loudly, "Sai Ram!" You know, and what happened then was something unbelievable. The pillion rider, he stretched out his leg and kicked my brother, and my brother's head just narrowly escaped coming under the wheel. Now, later on, my mother reflected and she said, how can this pillion rider's leg stretch out and become so long that it can reach the front wheel of the scooter? I mean, if you think logically, it's not possible. Maybe the person who's riding the scooter can do that, but not the person who's sitting behind. And they stopped the scooter immediately. They carried this boy up to my house, and my mother directly took him to the altar. And just when she took him to the altar, we saw that there was a drop of Amrit flowing from Swami's photo, just then. And my brother, in his innocence, 4.5-year-old boy, he remarked, Swami has saved me. That's why he's acknowledging that by sending the Amritam, isn't it, Ma? And we knew that that was really the case. And there was one more incident, again, 8 days after this, when I was just a 28-day-old baby. And I was born in winter, so that was January 1971. And it was one of the coldest in those few years in Meerut.
Meerut, UP gets very cold.
Very, very cold. And those days are not like now where we have heaters and all those facilities, you know. So it got very cold. And what happened was that night, my sister got fits.
Like epilepsy.
Epilepsy, yeah. So nobody was aware. Everybody was sleeping. But I started crying in the night. And just to see what is wrong with this baby, my mother switched on the light and I was perfectly fine. But just next to me, my sister who was sleeping, they realized that she had got this, you know, and her jaws were all contorted and her eyeballs went into different, and it was looking very shocking and very scary. She immediately woke up my father and the jaws were all stuck to each other and slowly they both unlocked, and they poured Swami's Vibhuti. And within minutes of pouring Swami's Vibhuti into her mouth, she immediately became all right, and she sat up and her whole body developed a sweat, you know. It was like Swami had infused a lot of heat to combat the cold, whatever was creating those fits. And she sat up and she said, what's wrong? What has happened? I'm all wet with sweat. And that was another incident that I remember.
So this seizure thing was unknown to the family till then?
No, it has never happened to her and never happened after that also.
Thank God.
Yeah. There was one more incident that I would like to share. This was when I was 2.5 years old.
Quite an adventurous baby, 20-day landmark, 28-day landmark, 2.5-day landmark. So all the important milestones in the family's journey started with your birth, it looks like.
Yeah, Swami entered our lives right then, you know.
So what did you do when you were 2.5?
I got lost. So we had come from Meerut to Delhi. We had come to see Swami, the whole busload of devotees, my relatives, my family, all of us had come. And we all came to Delhi to see Swami, and there was a huge pandal. I don't remember what was the area, but there were almost 25 buses parked at the parking lot, and our bus was one of them, and all the buses looked absolutely alike, you know. And after darshan, they all suddenly realized that I was missing. I was just 2.5. I did not learn how to read, or I couldn't read the numbers of the bus. And they were all very concerned. They searched the pandal high and low and they were very upset. Mom was, you know, continuously praying to Swami. And then after 1.5 hours, somebody decided that why don't we go and check it out in the bus. And then when we went and saw, I was happily sitting there with the driver. And the driver said, she just came on her own. We don't know. But my mother believed that maybe Swami held my hand and brought me in.
In the right bus?
In the right bus. The very bus which even adults wouldn't be able to
spot.
Yeah, yeah. And even before that, when I was a year old baby, I just began to walk. My house door, front door was left open. My parents and family were busy in, you know, doing the decorations during Navaratri. We have those golu, you know. We
do the altar.
Yes, yeah. So I think in that moment, they just had left the door ajar and I very happily I went outside the house, and our house is located in the first floor and there are 21 steps leading downward. And what I did was, the moment my brother realized that I'm outside, they called out to me, and all the more I became excited and started running. And I started rolling down the stairs. I stumbled down the stairs. And when my mother saw that, again she shouted, "Sai Ram," And during the Sai Ram, there was a cleaner lady who was actually, like a scavenger. Just below the stairs, a few feet away, was a big drainage. And this lady was cleaning that. And she had a broom in her hand. And she just threw the broom. She heard the Sai Ram. She threw the broom aside. She ran. And like how a cricket fielder, catches a ball, she knelt down and very elegantly caught me, But by then, I had already rolled down those 21 steps. But nothing had happened. It's amazing.
Made you sturdier for your life in Anantapur, which was awaiting you, didn't it? You've been through the school of hard knocks, so you were ready for Anantapur. How did that happen?
Coming to Anantapur is...
Your sister had already studied there.
Yes, my sister had already studied there. And it was my dream to come and study in Anantapur. In fact, I wanted to study in the 11th itself, but my father was not for it. He said, "You get 80% and I will send you." And I got one mark less than that. So I just took it that Swami didn't want me to go then. But those 2 years of studying in Bombay, now I think that it was really important, because my yearning for Swami and yearning for coming to Anantapur really increased at that time. I was very disillusioned as a teenager, and every day, there was not a day when I wouldn't pray to Swami, "Swami, please let me come and study in your college." And then before coming to Anantapur, it was a miraculous experience. Actually, I had a skin infection since my childhood in my feet, which used to really trouble me. I had a lot of oozing, and the doctors called it eczema, and a lot of oozing and itching and scratching, and sometimes I would become anemic and would have disease spells. I have fainted outside this when I was standing in the queues and lines and all that. Things like that have happened. And my father was very anxious for me. He said, "How would you manage in Anantapur? It's so hot. And if something like that happened, how will you manage?" And I was very confident. I said, "No, Swami will take care." But probably Swami wanted to put my father's anxiety at rest. Now, before this, when I was just 12 years old, Swami came in a dream. And in my dream, he put my feet in his lap. And he massaged my feet. And he told me that, "Don't worry, this eczema will go in so many years." He gave some number, but I couldn't recollect what was that. But I was very happy that Swami said it will go. So whenever it has to go, it will go. I was in that feeling. And when I had applied for Anantapur, I got my admit card. And it was just 10 days I was due to leave for Anantapur. And I was outside my building.
In Mumbai?
In Mumbai. Yeah, we were living in Mumbai that time. This was the year 1988. And we lived in a Sindhi locality, And when I was outside my building running errands for my mother, a strange gentleman stopped me. And he looked just like a typical Sindhi. So, I didn't find it odd. He just stopped me and he started talking about my feet. It is quite visible, the eczema. And he said, "What is this problem? I know, I tell you what you have to apply. And if you apply this, it will definitely go. I'm assuring you, I'm guaranteeing you." And then he proceeded to tell me the name of the ointment.
Do you remember the name?
Yes, yes.
What was it?
He made me repeat it so many times, like he was taking a class for me. It was called Jakhmi Roos.
Jakhmi Roos?
Jakhmi Roos. Zakhmi Roos.
Zakhmi, because Zakhmi is a wound.
Yes.
I think it sounds like an Urdu word. It might be a Yunani medicine or
maybe
something. Zakhmi Roos.
Maybe.
Okay.
And it was manufactured by a company called Bhavsar Company in Gujarat.
So is it like an Ayurvedic thing?
I probably a herbal ointment.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I had never heard of it before. And a lot of people have been telling me a lot of remedies. I've tried a lot of remedies for my skin. But nothing had ever worked. But then when this man, he was speaking with such authority, so much of sincerity, so much of love. And he was absolute stranger. And normally I don't speak to strangers, But something about the man made me want to listen to him. And he was a man of medium height, medium build. He was wearing a white kurta, white pajama. He had white hair. And I still recollect his face, The way he spoke to me, and he literally ordered me. He said, "You check your purse. Do you have the money for it? It cost 2 rupees 50 paise in those days." He said, "Do you have the money?" And I checked. I said, "Yeah, I have the money." He said, "Right now, don't go home. Go straight to the medical shop and buy this and start applying it every day." And he was very, very, confident of what he said. And after 20 minutes of this conversation, finally, I turned my way to go and buy, and he also turned. And I would have taken just 3 steps, Karunadidi, just 3 steps. And I started thinking, could this have been Swami? And the moment I thought that, I turned back. And in 3 steps, this man had vanished. It was a long road. It was not like he could have disappeared into some alleys or gullies or anything. And he had absolutely vanished. And then I walked the whole stretch of the road, literally ran, and I have long legs, I literally ran, and I couldn't find him. And he was quite a person wearing white and white. Not many people wear that. And I couldn't find him at all. I searched for almost 10 minutes. I couldn't find him. Then I was all the more convinced that this is Swami. I went straight to the medical shop. I had exactly the amount, and I bought that one ointment tube, and I went back home. My mother was even more excited. She said, this is Swami, and you must apply it. And within 3 days, intensity of my infection came down from 100% to 20%. In 3 days. By the time I was ready to leave for Anantapur, for Parthi to write my entrance, it was almost negligible, and my father's, all his anxieties were set at rest. And it never went back to that intensity ever again after that. It was really amazing thing.
Right, that's a great tip. I hope it works for our listeners also. If anybody is suffering from eczema, just some Zakhmi Roos from the pharmacy in Bhavsagar.
Bhavsar company. I don't know Bhavsar if they still manufacture it.
In Gujarat.
Yeah.
Worth Googling.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. So tell us about your Anantapur days.
There's a humorous incident happening in my group discussion and interviews, I was so nervous in my interview, and when the Vice Chancellor asked me, are you ready to join in with your bag and baggage? I said, yes, sir, I'm ready to join with my gab and garbage. And they all laughed. And I thought maybe they will reject me on that, but they didn't. So my stay at Anantapur was absolutely, and like I said, I was yearning and dying to come there. So I never
But
felt,
then your sister Nirmala Shekhar had already passed out.
Yes.
Graduated from there.
Yes, she had already graduated. I was dying to be there. So every moment of my stay, I thoroughly enjoyed. I never felt the difficulties that normally people do. Like my room seniors were so loving. And I remember when I joined, within the first or second month, my mother was unwell. And when I shared that with my seniors, they said that you just visualize Swami being there next to her and blessing her. And that will help. You don't have to feel helpless about it. And that is a tip I follow till today, just visualizing, especially now that Swami is not there in his physical form. It really helps. It makes Swami so real for us, and we can feel his energies. And then a wonderful incident happened in my first year. I think that was the year 1989, January. It was Swami's last visit to Anantapur. And of course, at that time, we didn't know that. I was a very ordinary girl in Anantapur, in the sense I was not very extraordinarily talented. I was not in the music. Or in the, I was not a speaker or a dramatist or anything. So I was not in any of those groups that I would get more chances with Swami, more physical interactions. In fact, whole of my Anantapur stay was, I enjoyed Swami from far. I would be just happy just being in Parthi. I would just be happy looking at Swami. And it didn't, now thinking back, I think it didn't really matter to me that Swami, whether Swami was looking at me or whether he blessed me. Though whenever he did, it was always a bonus. And that day when Swami came to Anantapur, he first went to the college. There was a series of programs and drama and discourses, prize distribution. And after that, he was scheduled to come to the hostel to have lunch with the girls. And I'm sure he must have done that many times in your times too, right?
A few times, yes, definitely.
Yeah, that was the only time for me. And he entered the dining hall, the huge dining hall from behind. And he sat and had lunch with the girls. And all the girls were in neat rows, seated in neat rows. And I and one more classmate of mine, her name was Vijay Lakshmi, we had been assigned a unique duty as Dwarapalakas. The passageway which connects the dining hall to the hostel. We were made to sit there and do something like a security duty. And, asked to ensure that girls don't follow Swami and there is discipline and all that. So I was happily sitting there with my friend. And we were a little away from the main dining hall, especially after the lunch, where Swami was just having casual interaction with the girls. And then suddenly, after 10 minutes, Swami got up from this chair and he started walking through one of the rows. And while he was walking through the rows, he started giving Padnamaskar to the girls. And seeing that many girls from all other rows also joined in, you know, like how they normally do. And everybody was getting the Padnamaskar. I could see from my position that all my classmates and friends were getting Padnamaskar. And here I was, you know, getting envious and saying, oh my God, I'm missing this Padnamaskar and what to do. And I kept looking at my friend. My friend was very calm and she was just in her place. But I was very restless and I got very agitated. And I got up from there and I went and joined the second row, the row next to where Swami was giving, because that first row was already full. And Swami walked, finished the first row of Padmaskar, and I'm waiting here for Swami to turn. And you know how Swami is. He just turned the other side and entered the same passageway where I had got up from. And immediately my heart sank. And then I immediately got up, you know, because that was actually my duty spot. And I walked and Swami had already entered the passageway. And when I saw from behind, what I saw, tears started flowing from my eyes because Swami was giving Padmaskar to my friend Vijayalakshmi. And it was a proper 1 minute long Padmaskar. She bent her head and kissed Swami's feet and exactly the Padmaskar that I've always wanted to have. And I had missed it. Then Swami continued into the hostel and I went back and sat in my place. And my friend very lovingly asked me, why did you get up, Lata? You could have got your Padmaskar here. I just kept quiet, you know. And tears were flowing in my face. And it took me a few weeks to recover from that. Maybe even a few months. But in the next few months, I realized that a subtle change had come over me. I found myself becoming very duty conscious. And very committed to what task was assigned to me. Even if it was a very irrelevant task, I would be very, very focused. And I didn't bother about rewards or appreciation or anything like that. It just happened. And then slowly over the next year, I realized that what I thought was a missed opportunity was Bhagwan's greatest blessing for me. He had gifted me, transformed me in that one instant of not giving the Padmaskar. In his denial was his big blessing. And to this day, I'm very conscious about my duties. And I'm so grateful to Bhagwan for that learning that he gave to me. And there's an addition to the story, Devi. Even though I knew that I had got this beautiful learning and blessing, in my heart of hearts, I still craved for that Padmaskar.
Of course.
And I did get a lot of other Padmaskars at different points of time when Swami would give saris and he also gave us a robe in 1990. But that craving, that learning still lingered. And that also Swami satisfied. Just a month before his Mahasamadhi, in 2011, I was part of a group for the Vidyavahini project. And when Swami came near me, he looked deep into my eyes. And I just touched his feet, but with that touching, my yearning was completely satiated. It was complete.
So many years later, huh?
So many years later.
Quite a journey.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everything is perfect in God's time, but the perfection is clear only in hindsight.
Yes, yes.
When you can connect all the dots.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Anandpur Days must have had more than one interaction apart from the one that you mentioned, 1989, the last physical visit by Bhagwan to the hostel and the college.
Correct.
What are your fondest memories of interacting with him or receiving the grace of interviews, group interviews as a student?
Like I said, in 1990, Swami gave us the robes. And that is a day I will never forget. It was slightly drizzling and we were in Prashanti Nilayam and suddenly there was, whispers. Yeah, exciting that Swami is going to give us robes. And we couldn't believe, we had never heard of Swami giving us robes till then. And we were quickly asked to form into lines. And those days, the Sai Kulwant Hall, the flooring was concrete. It was neither sand nor tiled like how it is now. It was a little bit of concrete. And sometimes when we walk barefoot, it can prick our feet, you know. And Swami used to come in that, you know, we used to walk on that floor. And I remember sitting and waiting and just looking at the floor and thinking how poor Swami has to walk and give Padmaskars and robes and how his feet must be, you know, aching. But he came and it was slightly drizzling and there was droplets of water on his hair and droplets of water on his robe. And very lovingly, he gave multicolored, different robes to different girls. Some got yellow robes, some got...
What color was yours?
Mine was orange. And I loved it. I love it still. And some girls got red robes, some got yellow, some got white. And it was just so beautiful, the whole experience. And I got up and asked Swami, I said, Swami, I want your love. When Swami was giving me the robe. And apparently he didn't answer me. And I thought, oh, Swami didn't answer me. But later on, after the namaskar was over, my friend who was sitting on the other side, she came to me and said, Lata, did you ask Swami something? I said, yeah, I did ask. I said, ask Swami, I want your love. And she said, Swami looked this side and said, love, 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 three times. So that was an answer. And it was the most heavenly experience. I treasure it the most.
I can imagine. What a special moment.
Yeah, yeah.
As girl students, such moments are very few and far between for most of us.
Very few. We treasure just a glance. Yeah. Swami looking at us. Like once during the summer course, I was standing outside a window in the dining hall in Bangalore, Kalyan Mandapam. And Swami was just passing by inside and I was outside and I was the only one there. And Swami looked straight and deep into my eyes. And after Swami passed by, I looked around and, you know, did Swami look at somebody else behind me? But there was nobody else. And I realized he had looked at me. And today, when I think of it, you know, Didi, I've never got interviews. I've never got personal interviews or personal interactions like so many other devotees have got. But I treasure this moment of those moments of Swami looking at me, those moments of Swami just blessing my chocolates and throwing it, those moments when Swami gave me the sari. And once my father-in-law had given me my late mother-in-law's Mangal Sutra to get blessed. He said, you can wear it. So I brought it when I was getting Padmaskar as an alumni. And Swami came, he was giving saris. And he was just about to give the sari and he saw that in my hand was this Mangal Sutra and he stopped. And he, with his bare hand, he touched. And I still can feel not only Swami blessing the Mangal Sutra, he blessed my hand as well because his hand touched my right hand.
Hmm.
I mean, these are moments that are priceless. I always tell myself, how can I make these moments irrelevant just because I have not got an interview or just because I have not got, you know, Swami has not created a ring or it doesn't matter. He's God. And having been born at the same time when Swami was there in this, I think that itself is the greatest blessing. And then all these little blessings, they have made my life, you know.
Priceless blessings.
Priceless blessings, yes.
And the greatest blessing is to realize their worth. Many people may have received many blessings in life. And after a while, they sort of seem, it can happen. People can have forgetfulness.
Yes.
Spiritual forgetfulness.
Yes.
And Swami said it was based on their account of merits. So we need His grace to even savor this
yes.
grace and to remember its worth.
Yes.
Otherwise we can fall into the web of delusion very quickly.
Yes, yes.
And I think He said that because Swami was such a skillful everything, skillful parent. So just to assuage our discomfort of how much attention He gave the boys, in my time He used to tell us very often that my girls are like the bees that come from far. They just suck the honey out of the flower and they go back. My boys, they're all around me. They're like toads in the pond. They don't know what's above. I'm sure He didn't tell the boys the same thing that often. But just to satisfy us and to make us feel special, He often compared us to the honeybees that came and, you know, just sucked the beautiful sweet honey and we knew the worth of it.
Yeah, yeah.
What a beautiful lotus we had here in our beloved Swami.
Yeah. This feeling of valuing His omnipresence, for me, it grew even more intensely, because in 2001, I had a spinal surgery. And then I graduated from being a ground person to a chairperson. And all the more I was, my darshans became more far, further away. And Swami also started moving from walking to coming in the golf cart to going in the car. And we could hardly see Him. And at that time, I started doing, practicing this visualization even more. Just simple. It was not some great meditation, but just visualizing Swami being there with me, standing next to me, you know, blessing me. And I would do that all the time. And that gave me so much of comfort, so much of joy, so much of happiness. So much so that sometimes when Swami would, like once I remember during Christmas, Swami called the conductor of the orchestra and he gave him a long Padmaskar and he gave him, created a chain for him. And I was so happy as if Swami had created for me, you know, as if I had touched Swami's feet and I had, you know, I had kissed Swami's feet and it was such a blissful feeling. And I keep reminding myself that Swami is there all the time and I can just tap onto his energy anytime I wish to. You know, it is just there.
Let me narrate to you an episode. Our room leader was Kotesa. I asked him, is it compulsory to go for darshan? I had the nerve to ask him that.
I think it's a very sea change when you become a Sai student, because it's only when I've joined the Satya Sai College I discovered that this God is not a photograph on the wall and he's not something so distant. He's something very, very near you.
And this was lovely because there you had on the gymnastic bench the student on one side, Swami on the other side, locked in battle. Again, it was arm wrestling with Swami. With Swami.
And having been given the divine golden opportunity to have studied in his institutions and directly experienced his love, then we have to really live our lives to reflect his teachings.
Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges. You can also listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai on the Morning Glory segment of Thursday Live, which starts at 9:40 a.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org. You can also download and listen to this at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/sai students. That is radiosai.org/SAI STUDENTS. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India on May the 1st, 2014. The time at the Radio Sai Studios right now is 55 minutes past 10 a.m. You just heard part one of my Fleeting Moments conversation with Mrs. Lata Ramesh of Bangalore, and I do hope you enjoyed it. We look forward to your feedback, comments and thoughts by email at listener@radiosai.org. And I am further pleased to inform you that next week I will play the concluding part of this interview with Lata Ramesh right here on Morning Glory. Before I close today's episode and offer it to our beloved Sai, I'd like to share with you some words of wisdom from the sage of Thiruvannamalai, Sri Ramana Maharishi. I've taken this quote from Be As You Are, the teachings of Sri Ramana Maharishi, edited by David Godman. Ramana says, and I quote, "Happiness is your nature. It is not wrong to desire it. What is wrong is seeking it outside when it is inside." And in Happiness and God's Grace, Sri Ramana Maharishi says, "You and I are the same. Nobody doubts that he exists, though he may doubt the existence of God. If he finds out the truth about himself and discovers his own source, this is all that is required. God dwells in you as you, and you don't have to do anything to be God-realized or self-realized. It is already your true and natural state. Just drop all seeking. Turn your attention inward and sacrifice your mind to the one self radiating in the heart of your very being. For this to be your own presently lived experience, self-inquiry is the one direct and immediate way." I love this one. He says, "Wanting to reform the world without discovering one's own true self is like trying to cover the world with leather to avoid the pain of walking on stones and thorns. It's much simpler to wear shoes." All these quotes collected from the works of Sri Ramana Maharishi, published by Samuel Weiser, edition 1977. As you reflect on the wisdom of Sri Ramana Maharishi, I bid you Sai Ram and I wish you a Sai Sam awesome day ahead. Up next is Raghu with Service Love in Action. Till we meet next Thursday, Jai Sai Ram.
पावन सीताराम।